Hey guys, it's Jenna Elfman from Fear the Walking Dead. I play Laura. No, I play Naomi. No, I play June. I play June on Fear the Walking Dead. And you're listening to the Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through on Talk Through Media.
Hey, I'm Lindsley Register and I play Laura on The Walking Dead. You're listening to The Walking Dead Talk Through on Talk Through Media.
Survivors, welcome to episode 77 of Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Brian.
And I'm LT.
And Kyle is out again this week. He's moving. He actually moved out of Chicago this week and into very rural Illinois. Good on him. But he's going to be out. I don't know if he's going to be able to be back next week or not, but that's where Kyle is. So
we're hoping
he'll be able to. I think part of it is going to be whether or not he can join us via internet. He may join us by phone if his internet's not running, but anyway, hopefully he'll be back next week. We are here to cover season 6, episode 9 of Fear the Walking Dead, titled Things Left to Do. But first, we have some feedback for Fear the Walking Dead, season 6, episode 8, titled The Door. So let's bring on Rick and Simon.
We can talk about it.
We're done talking. Time to listen.
And I should mention, this week, I am using a brand new device to record our podcast, so hopefully it will sound good.
Yay.
Yeah, so I made a little investment this week. Anyway, okay, so first we have Aaron from the internet, and we're going to split this one up, so I'm going to start. She says, this is speculation on my part, but I think the poor she's quoting us, but I think the poor storylines of season 4B and 5, as well as the fan reaction to Garrett / John versus the show, were the reasons why Garrett left the show. Basically, he wanted to go for greener pastures. You think? Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that's part of it, but I think, you know, there's, you know, when they're doing stories like they were with, you know, flying across and, you know, kids, fixing up an airplane and stuff like that, you know, it becomes pretty silly. And, you know, and that's what I personally, you know, witnessed. Like I may have even been guilty of it myself. I know I saw, it would have been before 4B started, but it was, I saw her and the thing that you hear at the beginning of the podcast where Jenna Elfman says, you know, Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. I got that from Walker Stalker Con Orlando 2018. Which is like the only Walker Stalker Con I ever got to go to. And, you know, I know people like said things like, you know, I hate, you know, I don't like the show, but I love your character. And even then it wasn't so much that, but it was at the time they had just killed off Madison, you know? So people were like, and myself included, were all like, you know, what the heck do we, you know, what kind of show are we getting, you know, coming back? And then, you know, I know what other people said to them at like, you know, Walker Stalker Con Atlanta and things like that. And you just get that kind of thing building. And after a couple of years of, you know, getting it on Twitter and probably Instagram and all that kind of stuff, it just kind of, I imagine for Garrett, probably just, you know, he's like, why am I still here? So that's my take.
And I still take the cynical approach that he earned some more cred doing the show and he got some more projects coming in and said,
yeah,
yep, maybe it's time to shuffle off and go make movies.
Yeah, true. I mean, you know, he was definitely, I think his salary went up a little bit, you know, doing this show. So, you know, capable of, I think he was always capable of doing leading man roles, but, you know, I can't think that this hurt him. So,
well, it definitely added to his action hero cred.
Right. Right. Okay. So continuing on to the podcast, she says, Kyle exists. That's all we need to know. Smiley face. Yeah. Kyle still exists. Like I said, hopefully he'll be back, next week. But if not, certainly in 2 weeks. Talking The Walking Dead on a fear episode, that sadly feels accurate given more and more TWD people are coming over to our series now. Ha. Yeah, well, I know you were talking about all the feedback that we got for Here's Negan. That was pretty pivotal, you know, backstory episode that we got, you know, the week before. So it's fitting that we would get, you know, still be getting some feedback in about that show, that episode, sorry.
Right.
Hashtag bring back Madison. Yeah, we know. I'm actually going to agree. Oh, well, of course she has big smiley face there. I forgot to say that. I'm actually going to agree with Brian and say, I think it took more guts to kill off John than it did Madison, because Madison was just a stupid choice on their part. And so to write out another fan favorite like John after such a stupid move is a pretty big deal. Do I have to wonder now if he hasn't volunteered? Who would it have been to get kicked off the show? Did he push for it to be soon? So that's why it happened in the return episode. If they had to wait, when would the exit have taken place? Talking Dead airs so late now that I don't bother staying up to watch it. So I don't know if Garrett answered any of these questions or not, but it has me curious now. But yeah, I'd say even with him forcing their hands, it was still a big thing to kill off John so early, knowing how popular he is. It's a good thing that they have a renewal supposedly already locked up, because doing this without it, it may have taken that chance away from them. Ha. Well, I mean, he was on Talking Dead and he did talk about it. And I remember he said something about like he was ready to go or something like that.
Yeah. That was kind of what he said.
Yeah. And just to not correct you, but just so you know, Aaron, the last week's episode would have been the mid-season finale, but they didn't finish it in time for COVID. So a lot of the scenes were actually recorded or were shot like back in 2020, around March of 2020. And unfortunately, they just didn't finish all the shooting before they had to stop shooting. So that's why this particular episode didn't air like in the fall, because they still had to shoot part of it. So like what Jenna Elfman said, the scene where she had to kill, you know, the zombie John wasn't shot at the time of, you know, the first, you know, like pre-COVID. It was post-COVID. So she had to sit on it basically for months, you know, knowing that she had to kill him. So that's how it went down, you know. So part of I don't know how much of that episode was still yet to be shot, but certainly a part of it. All right. So she continues, If the characters you named have plot armor, LT, what does Morgan have? Because that dude should have died so many times already. Is it showrunner petitis?
It's showrunner petitis.
Yeah. He's definitely got that golden child air to him. Well, I don't know. Since she mentioned you, do you have anything to say about that?
No, I'm waiting. My comments later.
Okay. Dakota is definitely the psychopath of the family. Ha. Well, I don't know. I think some of that was kind of discounted in this latest episode. I mean, I don't know. How much of it was upbringing versus, genetics? I don't know. It seems like the whole family was had a bit of a screw loose.
Yep. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah. Because it sounds like the parents of Ginny and / grandparents of Dakota weren't, a prize either. But, maybe they're all psychopaths. I don't know. Stop killing my Madison dreams, LT. Ha! Okay, I bet you this is what you have to say.
That's correct. I'm sorry, I am the Russian gymnastics judge of the podcast. It's my job. I have to have the contrary opinion. I am the squasher of dreams. That's why he hired me.
Well, and I've brought it up lots of times because I know a lot of people. Like, I know Aaron is definitely in the Madison camp. And there are many people that are in the Madison camp, but there are, I'd say, just as many people in the anti-Madison camp, and just people that were fans of the show that, for whatever reason, did not like her. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't a big fan of her either the first couple seasons. I was just starting to like her, and then she turned on the stupid lights of the hotel, and that just drove me nuts.
Yep.
So, that's one thing I can say, but I don't know. She had her detractors. I know, Aaron, you don't see it that way, but I've been covering this show for, 6 seasons now. And, I've definitely heard feedback, positive Madison and negative Madison. So,
and some of us are not in the bring back Madison camp.
Yeah.
We have cookies.
And, the same can be said about, say, Nick. There were a lot of people that loved Nick and a lot of people that hated Nick. Same kind of thing. Most people seem to love Alicia, especially into season 3. I think the everything, the tide kind of turned, mm-hmm. Toward her, being a big fan favorite. But, I know the first couple seasons, she wasn't everybody's favorite. She wasn't as bad as Chris, mind you, but some people had issue with her, and anyway, that was part of the problem with the show. There were certain characters that kind of were,
there were a lot of characters that there was no middle of the road for.
Yeah,
either you loved them or you hated them.
Yeah.
And I can only speak to my own experience, but when Daniel was the only one that I really had any strong feelings for in the first crew. So,
yeah.
And Alicia grew on me as time went on.
Yeah. LOL to Texas, the land of magic batteries. Well, it's not just the land of magic batteries, but the land of magic land, I would say, where time and distance has no meaning. But we'll get more into that again. We've talked about this many times on this show, and we will again this week. Mm-hmm. Why is Morgan the only person who can end Ginny? And she says, because sad facts, frowny face. It's that showrunner petitis flaring up. Morgan Jones, you are the one to end this show. I agree. Ha. He basically killed it in a large part with season four already. I don't know. I can't put that on Morgan. I have to disagree with you there. I would say a lot of it goes with the showrunner's stupid story and not Morgan Jones or his acting or his character. You know, I think a lot of it's this crazy story.
Yeah, I think a lot of it was the case. You can't blame Morgan for being on the boat when it's taken on water when he's just right.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah. Why? Oh, wait a minute. Sorry. The scene. The scene with June at the end was unnecessary. Again, that was just painful to add to pain because there was no reason to have it be her who killed him after we already saw him get shot. I disagree. I think that was pivotal, and it certainly played into this week. In a lot of ways, it was like kind of fitting because that's how John found her, right? Is she washed up
on the river?
On the river, at his cabin, and this time he washes up there, and unfortunately he's dead. So then she says, and we had someone else talk about this, thanks for sharing your feelings, Brian. And then there's like applause emoji, and I'll probably go into that a little more in the voicemail because we have a little bit more about that, but I might share a little bit more out, we'll see, or I might not. Here's another pitch. Just use the canoe to go down or up the river. Some get off at a clear spot and go around the zombie pile. There's honestly no reason to clear that bridge unless you're going to drive through with a caravan later.
Yeah, well, that's
a valid point. I mean, you know, I guess a lot of it depends on how deep that river is, you know, like whether or not you could just drive through it.
Mm-hmm.
But you would think that there'd be some spot where like a 4x4 pickup or a Jeep or something like that could get over the river, you know? So,
yep.
All right. So that's it for my portion of Aaron's feedback. So I'm going to hand it off now to LT.
Okay. Here's the thing about Dakota and John asking, was her freedom worth a man's life? If you're saying 15 like Dakota, assuming her age, and a good bit of your formative years were spent zombie killing, and before that she has her parents dying, and who knows what their home life was like, you can kind of get how violence is the answer she goes for most. How it's literally business to her, more than personal necessarily. Also, just assuming she's someone who's not violence prone and wants out of Lawton, he could stop her, which is taking her freedom, and her freedom is important to her, so yes, it is worth his life to her. Also, who is John to ask that when she was killing Rangers left and right to make it so they kept their freedom and safety at the Gulch? It felt hypocritical of him, honestly. Sure, you can say Dakota should have told him that she'd take him and the girl with her, and then split when they were out, but it's also easier for one to run than three not to be caught, you know? I'm not saying she shouldn't be judged for the killing, but I also get why, yes, she could kill him if he threatened her freedom. Just think of it as a hostage situation. Would John blame a victim who shot their kidnapper in an attempt to escape? If no, then why is he asking Dakota was her freedom worth the guy's life? No season for this series is as bad as the garbage that was season four. I kind of think Dakota was surprised by the fact she shot John and only pushed him off to cover that, because she does kind of drop the gun some, and then she gets this shocked look on her face for a moment, so I think she may have discharged it subconsciously, if that makes sense. Not because she was really ready to fire at that moment. That could just be me, though. I agree with Glennis. How does a 15-year-old patch up someone with an almost point-blank gunshot wound? Okay, she may know some stuff, but enough to save him? It's very suspect. She's either taught by June or June level in skill.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And
well, the only thing is, he did have that bout of, you know, gangrene and limpitude there after he wandered out. So maybe she didn't do such a bang up job after all.
Yeah. Or a limited amount, yeah. You know. And I'm surprised that I didn't say it earlier, but I'm surprised that you mentioned the garbage that was season four. And are you talking the entire season four, or are you talking 4A, 4B? Well, we know that you didn't like Masson being killed, so maybe you meant the entire season. Personally, I don't know. I think 4B was the worst, and then 5 is a very
close second.
Very close second. I still can't get over, you know, Morgan falling asleep and waking up Mississippi.
Yep. I think that's going to stick with us for a long time.
Yep.
Okay. She says, again, anytime you see the show go over an hour for the time, you know something is going down.
Very true.
They're not going to kill Grace until the baby is born. As much sense as it would make for Jenny or anyone to shoot her a bargaining chip, very few shows have the guts to shoot a pregnant person, no matter how in line with the story it is.
Yeah, that's kind of a no-no.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it does have Reuben in the credits, but seriously, how often do we see him? He doesn't have screen time as he did in the very start, and heck, Sherry, who just joined, has had about as much screen time as he has had all season, if not more. Contract-wise, he may not be a guest, but screen time-wise, he's a special guest star now.
Okay, fair enough.
Yep.
I can't disagree with that, but I don't know. They've been doing the actors quite a bit different this season where, you know, like pretty much all of them, they, with the exception of Morgan, you know, the characters have been, you know, a little here, and then we don't see them for like 3 or 4 episodes. And then, like, you know, for example, Alicia, we saw her quite a bit in episode 2 and then not again until episode 7. And then she was in episode 8, but only a little bit. And, you know, she was in this episode, but just a little bit more, but not that much more.
Right.
You know, I don't know.
Okay, she goes on to say, if they had killed June, then killed John later because Garrett wanted out, then you could have John say dying was okay because he was going to see June, and so you get some happiness in the messed up world, as it were. True, you can still do that with June saying it when her death comes, but it won't have the same punch, I feel, as if John went last, given he's such a fan favorite. June is an interesting character, and people like her, but they don't love her like people seem to have loved John for his good-natured ways.
I would agree.
Yeah. And finally, she says, according to a Bing search, unlike sociopaths, psychopaths are unable to form emotional attachments. Psychopaths tend to be aggressive and predatory in nature.
And I think I read that very thing last week. So after we recorded and before we got the episode out, I did a little more reading about psychopath versus sociopath. And that was one thing that, they're unable to form emotional attachments, where sociopaths can form emotional attachments in some situations, but not all.
Right.
You know, and if you think about it, that defines Negan to a T, right?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause he had emotional attachments to kids, for example, to certain women,
mm-hmm.
But not much when it comes to men.
Yeah.
So.
And just to finish up with what she said, Dakota could honestly go either way, but I feel she probably leans more psychopath than sociopath.
I tend to agree.
And I would probably agree as well.
Yeah. All right. So now it's time to get into this episode. Season 6, Episode 9, titled Things Left to Do. This episode is written by Nick Bernardone. And just looking him up, he, most of his credits on IMDb are as a script coordinator. So he was a script coordinator on The Walking Dead. Looks like The Walking Dead seasons 7 and 8. Although a lot of it, he didn't get credit for it, but it lists him in IMDb, but it says uncredited. But anyway, looking at it, looks like season 7 and 8, he was there. And then he was also a script coordinator on Fear the Walking Dead, season 4, it looks like. And then he's also been a writer, and he's done some for, looks like he had done some comedy. So he wrote some stuff, looks like webisodes for 30 Rock. And then he also wrote a couple of episodes of The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. And he also wrote an episode of The Walking Dead Red Machete.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as Fear the Walking Dead, this is his second episode. He wrote season 5, episode 13, Leave What You Don't. And that one was the episode where, what's his name? Matt Frewer's character was killed, I believe. So at the,
I think you're right.
Yeah. At the oil, you know, whatever they, the gulch, not what, that wasn't the gulch. What did they call that place? I forget. Anyway, there. And I can't think of his character either. But anyway, so he wrote that, and this is his second, episode, writing credit on Fear. And it's directed by co-executive producer Michael E. Satrasimus for the second episode in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And this, like I was saying earlier, this would have been the mid-season premiere had COVID not hit. So that's what it was originally written to be. And last week would have been the mid-season finale. So anyway, the description, and I got this off of Google, a standoff occurs between Virginia and her Rangers and Morgan's group. Ginny has made a lot of enemies, and it's finally catching up to her. I can totally see that.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. All right, LT, what would you give this episode?
Well, I gave this episode a 9.5 out of 10. That's so much for good intentions, Morgan.
Yep. And I'm going to give it 9.5. Gee, I didn't expect you to do that. All right. So we have some listener ratings. LT, why don't you start it off?
All right. Glennis from Toronto says 9 out of 10. Ding dong, the Wicked Witch is dead.
Renee from Atlanta says 9 out of 10. Glennis, you beat me to the punch. That's what I was going to say. And she has smiley face, smiley face, smiley face. But hey, great minds think alike. And that's, is that a kiss? Kiss face?
It's like the winky kiss.
Winky kiss. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Dieta from Detroit says 9 out of 10 to kill Jenny or not.
And last is Aaron from the internet. And this isn't a rating, but it seemed most appropriate to put this as a rating. She just simply says, another frustrating episode overall. Okay. So let's move on to our awesome sauce.
Awesome sauce.
Okay. Well, we've got some listener awesome sauce. Deanna from Detroit says, June killing Jenny. And it looks like hand waving emojis. Her time here is done.
Glennis from Toronto is next. She says, Morgan's Game of Thrones moment with the axe slash spear slash bow beheading of Virginia and then driving it into the ground. I think it will be next used pretty quickly in this Fear the Walking Dead universe. A nod to Excalibur and King Arthur and draw it out of the stone.
All right. Renee from Atlanta says, Jenny is freaking dead. You can't get any more awesome than that.
And then Aaron from the internet says, Alicia's and Strand's moment at the end. For a brief moment, the old vibe of the series was back and I loved it. All right. LT, what do you have for awesome sauce?
Well, one of my awesome sauces was seeing June put on John's hat. I just thought that was the ultimate cool, badass thing to do after she did what she did in the chapel, just to put that hat on and square up, and she went walking out. And no, and people came running, but nobody said, what did you do? What did you do?
Yeah.
They just looked at her, saw her with a hat on, saw that look on her face, saw she was packing John's gun, and watched her walk out.
Yep.
And about that, I just thought there was an incredible amount of symmetry. The fact that John gave Dakota the pistol, Dakota shot John with his own gun. When they brought Dakota back to Damtown, they took the gun away from her. She gets John's gun back and then uses John's gun to kill Virginia.
Yeah.
And of course, who better to have John's gun than June?
Right.
Which you kind of had that feeling when she was burying him, when she pulled the pistol out of his holster and before, I don't know, Ranger Dingus drew down on her, just the way they shot that and the way she was sitting there looking at it. I don't think at that point she was necessarily thinking about, you know, putting a bullet in Jenny. I think it was, she was just taking it in, you know, this is John's gun and John's in the hole. I think it was more just the reality of it sinking in. That's the way I took it. It's not that she was going to shoot her then, but it was just that moment of, you know, this is my husband's prized and beloved pistol. And he's in the hole that I'm trying to fill in. And there's a couple other things there I'll get to later. I thought Morgan, and I realize this is going to set somebody off, I thought Morgan was being very Rick-like this episode. You know, after they had the scene where he almost cut Jenny's head off, he made a very good point. It's the point that we've heard whenever they had the early Alexandria moments with Rick. The, if we do this, we're no better than them. We've got to
set, yeah.
You know, we've got to set a precedent. We've got to be better than this.
Yeah.
And two, it's just me, but when they had the Gulch gang lined up on the ground and Morgan came riding in on the horse, I just thought that was a pretty, you know, a pretty well written moment for him to show up and kind of pull the Morgan being the badass action hero moment. You know, I really like that. But yeah. Like I was saying, the fact that you can see that, we know that Morgan was trying, you know, gave Alicia the "I'm trying to build a place for us" speech. But I think out in front of the dam, in front of the, you know, the mask gang and Strand's people, I think he made a point when he's saying, we've got to be better than this. We're trying to build a community and we're not going to be like Jenny was.
Yeah. Yeah. And unfortunately, June kind of screwed that up a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, as far as I'm concerned, I'm surprised no one seemed to mention it from what I see. I love the opening scene in the cold open. I could kind of feel the anguish. I've had times like that when time seems to slow down and everything's got this kind of weird echo, mm-hmm. you know? I thought it was good that they kind of played on the Strand Daniel history. 'Cause if you remember at the dam, Strand shot Daniel in the face.
Yes, he did.
Yes. Season 3, episode 16, Sleigh Ride. If you recall, that was when he got shot in the face. So, was a good play on that. So it was good that he got put into that position again. And this time he didn't shoot him in the face.
Yep.
Yeah. And I thought it was very Strand to set himself up to be the next Ginny. And he basically did exactly what he said he was going to do, which was to do more damage from the inside.
From the inside.
Yeah.
And it is a very Strand thing to do.
Yes, it was. And of course, I thought that the axe scene was very tense. Colby Menifee, you know, yelling and screaming and, you know, pleading for Morgan to do it, and, you know, how close Morgan came to do it. And we see, you know, all this stuff flashing back to him. He saw John, he saw all sorts of stuff. Did he even see stuff from Walking Dead?
I think he did.
I thought that scene was well shot and well choreographed and was very tense, and I enjoyed it. So, and of course, I think somebody said it. Well, they didn't specifically say it. The scene with June at the end, both shooting Ginny, but then, you know, walking away, taking where, you know, they're playing that, you know, cowboy music and, you know, where did she go? You know, did she just go on her own, or like, did she join up with Sherry's group or up with Strand again? I'm curious where she's going to end up. And it's kind of funny that she did that, you know, knowing that Grace is going to need care. So I'm curious, you know, what's going to end up with her, but we'll see.
We shall. And just to tag on to the last thought on the axe scene, you've got to give credit to Kobe Menifee, because this episode, I think she showed more range as an actor than she has in several of her previous appearances.
Yeah, one thing she still had going this episode was that nose flare up. that's something very noticeable with that character. Her nose just like her nostrils just like flare up to like, you know, three times her normal size. So I don't know if that's normal for her, but it's something I always notice with that character. And it's something that Zoe Coletti didn't have. So, you know, I guess she got her nose from her father, whoever that is.
Maybe that's a recessive trait.
Yeah. And made me wonder, like, who is the father? Like that one ranger who seemed to be very pro Ginny, was he romantically related? Not romantically related, but romantically linked to her, or, you know, what was going on there?
That her ex-boyfriend from many years ago survived the apocalypse to, I think we would have known. Just kind of.
I agree. All right. Well, let's move on, because we have the weak variety, weak sauce.
You're worthless and weak.
Okay. To start our listener weak sauce, we have Aaron from the internet saying, why should I care that Dakota is Jenny's daughter instead of her sister? Did the creators think this really increases the drama any? Maybe.
I don't know.
It definitely changes the vibe in my mind because
yeah,
there's a difference between, you know, maternal feelings and sibling feelings. I mean, now that I've gone back and thought about it, she was being way more than just sisterly. So, yeah, I can't disagree, but I kind of can see it. So.
Yeah. I tend to think that it was like it does kind of change the dynamic some, and, you know, this conflict, you know, this secret daughter versus sister, and, you know, it throws another dynamic about, you know,
why she was acting the way she was acting.
And Dakota, Dakota being mad at Ginny for killing her parents when they weren't her parents, they were her grandparents. And I don't know, it's like a whole thing. Cause she was probably young enough that she didn't remember her grandparents too well. And, you know, for that matter, they never really explored, when she killed their, her parents / grandparents.
Nope.
So I assume it was during the apocalypse. But we never really get that explained.
Nope.
All right. Glynis is next. She says, when, where, and or from whom did June get John's cowboy hat from? Did Morgan recover it from the bridge and then give it to June in the interim between the goings on with Virginia? Just seems there wouldn't be the need or that amount of time, and to also magically be given John's other gun in order to do the dirty deed. I understand why they would hide the fact of June getting a hold of John's gun, as then it is doubly unexpected when she draws and aims it at Virginia.
Well, the hat was on the ground when she was digging the grave.
Right.
I assumed that it was fished out of the river because it wasn't on his head whenever she got him as a zombie. But if you look, it's on the ground on the other side from her when she was digging the hole. And as far as the other gun, somebody gave it to her. I think there was a scene where she, when they were in the chapel, that she had it. So
yeah, I'd have to go back and look to see, you know, the specifics there, but
yeah. Okay. Deanna from Detroit says, at the end of the episode, when Grace, Daniel, and Sarah show up in the car and are smiling after Strand's betrayal, even if he formed an army against Jenny, he stood and watched her terrorize them. So when was he going to execute his takeover plan? After they died? A chin-scratching emoji. He only does it after Morgan reveals Jenny's truth about Dakota. I don't trust Strand at all.
Yeah, I had wondered about when he was going to, you know, do the takeover. But, you know, I think Strand is good at seizing the right moment. So I didn't find it there really being anything wrong with what I saw. But yeah, I mean, Strand is out for Strand. He always has been.
Yep.
And if Strand's plans, like if saving himself his chances are increased by saving you, he'll save you. But if his odds are better just saving himself versus saving you too, he'll save himself and leave you behind. You know, that's Strand. He's out for number one and, you know, just doesn't want to step in number two.
Right. Well, I kind of took it that it was part of the plan, because having Morgan show up at the right time. It just seems like that was sort of, it felt like that was the, they had a plan, and with Jenny doing what she did, it sort of forced that plan into action.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's the way I felt about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to me, Strand, you know, like, he's just going to look for a weak moment in Ginny, and he got his weak moment, and he, you know, he could see that the, like, she was just holding on tight, and, you know, she starts basically bargaining, and I'll get into that in my weak sauce, but she's, you know, she starts like going to the individual ones where it's like, hey, you know, I did this for you, I did that for you. And it's like a lot of negotiation, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, if you think about it, that's how she worked, right? So she took this adversary in Strand and like gave him like this top position in her like organization as like a negotiating tactic or something, you know?
Right.
That's kind of, in a different situation, that's something that she would have done to Morgan, you mm-hmm. know, but that's like, I guess she could use Strand's flexible morality, I guess you could say,
right.
against him, whereas, you know, Morgan doesn't have so much of a, well, he has a shifting morality in a way, because, you know, he'll be like, I don't kill, and then I'll kill. It's either I do not kill or I clear. I guess in some ways he's much more, he's more gray now than he has been in the past, but he's mostly white at this point, right. Or that's what he wants to be. So,
and I think Morgan may slide, but I think Strand is flexible.
Right.
And the other thing you could say is Jenny was using the old axiom of, you know, keep your friends close and keep your enemies closer.
Right.
That maybe she thought that, well, I can't really trust him, so I'm going to give him this position and try to keep him where I can keep my eyes on him. And maybe hoping that some of her people would also be keeping eyes on him.
Right. Yeah. All right. We have one more weak sauce from our listeners, and it's from Renee from Atlanta. She says, Morgan, seriously stop saying we're not killing people, because you are. This is a freaking apocalypse. It's survival of the fittest, except the fact it's going to always be an antagonist, because that is how it was before the apocalypse. There's good people and there's bad people. And then there's people that are going to do anything to make sure their family survives. And to me, that makes it okay to kill someone during the apocalypse, not in everyday life. Either they're going to kill you or you're going to kill them. So please stop it, Morgan, with these back and forth shenanigans about not killing people. I'm seriously over it. Get on your bestie Rick Grimes shit. shrug. What? And then angry face. I don't know if that's part of her what sauce or not. That might have been part of her what sauce, but it's there. So
okay, so on to our weak sauce, and for me, I have a big one this week. Freaking YouTubers trying to spoil my episode. Because somebody posted, it showed up in my feed. You know, they posted like the first 5 minutes of the episode and like the last 5 minutes of the episode, probably midweek or so.
Why would they do that?
I don't know. I guess they did it as soon as they saw it on Plus, maybe. I don't think it was like the official, you know.
I can't see it being AMC, the official. Yeah.
The AMC, you know, the AMC opening clip.
Yeah.
But it just kind of annoyed me, because I was really trying hard not to get spoiled.
Yeah.
And it just is just not fair. And I'm like, come on, man, don't give me that.
I remember there was like for Walking Dead, and actually for the first few seasons of Fear, I used to buy the episodes on Google, you know, mm-hmm. movies and TV or whatever they called it then. I think they call it like YouTube TV now or something. Anyway, so I would buy them on there because a lot of times I would miss episodes when we had Dish, and if there were storms, I'd miss the episode. So I got sick of that, and I finally started buying the episodes. So, and you would get a lot of the stuff that they, you know, they post now on Premiere and on AMC Plus, you know, the extra footage, and they would post that only there, like only for people that bought the episode. And I think that was even before they had Premiere. Anyway, so one particular week, and I remember which week it was. It was season 8, episode 4 of The Walking Dead, Some Guy. And it was the episode when Shiva died.
Right.
And they had the, like, you know how they don't do it every week now, but they used to have like the, you know, where the showrunners and the actors and, you know, people, producers of the show would talk about the episode. Well, right. They posted that on Friday before the episode actually aired. And back then you couldn't get the episode until Sunday. You had to watch it. The first time you could watch it was on the network. So anyway, they played this thing, and it basically spoiled that Shiva died before I got to see the episode. So that was AMC or Google or somebody screwed up and put that on there. So I knew Shiva died.
So, oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
My other bit of weak sauce was, you know, all the times that Jenny flip-flopped in this episode. Because one minute she was being, you know, Miss Super Hard Ass. Then she got kind of soft and almost likable, and where you could almost be sympathetic and kind of say, well, maybe she's not that bad. And then she'd snap right back around.
Yeah.
To being, you know, Little Miss Dictator Pants.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, come on, pick one.
Yeah. Yeah. First, you know, she was saying she had to see Dakota. Then she didn't want to see Dakota. And then they basically forced her to see Dakota. I don't know. It was kind of flip floppy. I agree with you. For my weak sauce, I love to give weak sauce to AMC or Talking Dead or whatever. And this is another one. This time it's the AMC app. And I had a much different experience when I watched the episode on AMC.com. Now, I should mention, right now, I don't have Premiere and I don't have Plus. I didn't bother getting Plus this week. So I'm doing it the old fashioned way, and I have to watch commercials. So unlike what I was doing with Premiere, where I could skip the commercials, I had to play the commercials. And if I watched it in the browser, I would get commercials similar to what you would see on the TV, like when the episode played. I watched it on my iPad, and every commercial break, I got an AT&T commercial 4 times in a row. Now, I'm not talking about 4 acts. Did they play the same commercial? No, I'm saying in each commercial break, they played this AT&T commercial 4 times in a row. So over the course of the episode, I probably saw that commercial 20, 25 times.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was just like over and over again. They play it 4 times in a row. And then they would have before they would bring it back to the episode, they would like have some AMC thing that they were, you know, promoting. But it was just driving me nuts. It's like, why do they keep showing the same commercial? And it was this, you know, stupid one where the AT&T lady has like this marker board that's looks like a basketball court, and she's using like a permanent marker, and they
right.
She does all this thing, and then she's like, oh, you know, one of the other people says, why did you write it in permanent marker? And then she's like, oh, I got to get a new board. And on it, it says, this commercial was done safely. So it had a COVID announcement on it. It was funny. Anyway, I know all that because I saw it 20 times.
Yeah. As opposed to the normal cholesterol medicine car commercials.
Yeah. Like when I was watching it on in my browser, which I was doing prior to us starting tonight, I was taking some more notes. I saw what I, you know, usually see, like that Jason Statham movie that's coming out. That was in the commercials, and they had, you know, several different commercials that played in the commercial breaks. It wasn't like what I saw on the app, but anyway.
That's weird.
It is weird. Did the place where Ginny got shot, did it change? Because I thought she was shot like in the same, roughly in the same place where like Rick had been shot and even John Dory had been shot. And then when Morgan like patched her up, it was the opposite shoulder. So I tried to look at it again, just, on the,
I think that was the correct shoulder.
Okay. Okay.
She got shot in the side with the hook hand.
Okay.
Because for some reason, when Morgan was toting her around, the side with the key looked like it was still intact.
Okay. Okay. Then I stand to be corrected there. This had kind of a Negan remix. So, you know, again, much like we had last episode where we had like elements from, you know, other episodes, this was very much a Negan remix. I thought we had a lineup, you know, a less intimidating lineup, complete with bargaining, like I mentioned before. And the thing that I didn't care for, and I had this in my what sauce, but I'm going to move this to my weak sauce. Why did Ginny, you know, pull the gun on Grace? Like, that's like her biggest, you know, bargaining chip, and she's going to kill her biggest bargaining chip? That made no sense. So,
Yeah.
And speaking of Grace, why in every single scene was Grace carrying her stomach like it was a football?
Well, that didn't bother me as much as she didn't quite have the pregnant walk.
Yeah. It just looked fake. And
it did.
Especially with the... it was almost like she was holding the padding in place because it didn't quite fit, you know, like she was too thin for it and it didn't look right. So she was holding it in, you know, or holding it in place. But it was so stupid. It's like every single scene she's got, you know, one hand, you know, like basically at her breast and then one hand, you know, at bottom of her stomach. And it just, I don't know if it was, you know, if you have to blame Karen David for this, if it was the producers that, you know, or the writer that wrote it that way, the director, I don't know who was at fault here, but it just looked really stupid.
Well, like I said, I didn't have as much trouble with her hand placement. it's just, if she's that big, and I have to look down the hall real quick. No, she can't hear me. both of our kids were big youngins. Mm-hmm. Both of my children were big babies. I was a big baby. And my mother mentioned it, and I saw it in my wife, that you kind of have, it's not, I won't say duck walk, but you walk differently. Mm. And that was what threw me, because she didn't quite have the pregnant walk. Like I said, I had less problems with the way she had her hands, because I've seen that manifest itself. What I had more of a problem with was just the way she walked. She was still walking fairly normally.
Sorry, everybody. We had a little bit of a technical glitch. One can say,
there's a conspiracy out there. You hear what I'm saying? There's a conspiracy. A C-O-N-spiracy.
And this is a good reason why I always belt and suspenders everything. So the new device, for some reason, stopped recording. So it seems to be recording now. So hopefully we'll be good. But I was recording another way. So anyway, we should be good, but sorry about that. You'll know that we had a little break there, but all right. My next weak sauce is time and distance again. So like, for example, how far are all these places from each other? It seems like they can get from point A to point B very quickly. The Sherry's group, they all get to the, you know, this dried up dam very quickly. Morgan and Ginny can walk there, and Morgan can, you know, take a horse and go back to Lawton, you know. So like, Texas is a pretty big state. We've complained about this, you know, since season 4, but again, we have to wonder, like, for example, if it's that close to Lawton, how come they never found it?
Exactly.
Yeah. It kills me, you know? So,
and I'll be complaining about, Sherry's happy fun bunch in a few minutes.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just seems like it's far away when it needs to be, and it's close when it has to be.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, it seems like the entire state of Texas in this place and here, except for the area where you could only get to it by plane from right. Last season, right? It seems like it's all about the size of a county. And you know, in Texas, I've not spent a lot of time in Texas. I basically just flew through Texas, but stayed at, I think, in Dallas overnight once. But I've looked at the map of Texas a lot, and they have like a whole lot of small counties in Texas. And it seems like the entire state of Texas in this show is maybe one or two of those counties, you know, maybe three.
Well, they have some small counties, and then they have some very large counties.
Oh, that must be out in the edges of the state.
But yeah, I'm with you. It just seems like that they're close when they need to be, and they're far away when they need to be, and it's difficult enough to find when they don't want to be found.
Right. Exactly. So my next thing, well, I'll just add to that. Like how does Morgan get to there just in the nick of time? Like, and what was he doing? Was he like sprinting with the horse, you know, going as fast as they possibly could? it just, I just got to shake my head. Daniel, I timed this. So he gets hit with the butt of the gun at 5 minutes and 45 seconds of in the episode.
Okay.
By 7 minutes and 4 seconds, his head wound, I would think, should still be gushing out blood, but all we get, like, it's basically dried out by that time, and all we're getting by that time is a little trickle. Like, if you look at his head wound, it's this massive, like, you know, opening that's like, looks like it's close to an inch wide. Not talking about an inch long, we're talking wide, you know? So, like, if he was hit like that, you would think that he would be bleeding all over the place. And yeah, there's like initial bleed, but then it just stops. And all we see at first when I looked at it, I didn't think he was even bleeding at all. And then I noticed these, like, you know, little streams of blood still dripping down his face very slowly. So I just looked at that and said, BS.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'll have to go along with that because from personal experience, you know, head lacs tend to bleed and they tend to bleed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's another one of those. It gives me pause. It makes me want.
Yeah. It was one of those things where I didn't notice it too much on the first watch, but on the second and the third watch, I was like, that doesn't look realistic to me at all, you know? And then I mentioned it earlier about Ginny going for her number one piece of leverage. Like, she threatens to take out Grace right away. And you would think if she was smart, she would, you know, start with like Sarah or Luciana or someone like that versus going with your first and most important bargaining chip. You know, it seemed crazy to me that she would do that. I didn't believe it.
Yeah. It's like, you're already upset that Morgan's still alive, so let's go ahead and just seal the deal and, you know, take out his pregnant girlfriend.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so that's it for my weak sauce. So let's move on to what sauce?
What?
All right, Renee from Atlanta. She says, June, oh, we only have the one what sauce. So June is going to be a bad mamma jamma. Like I said about Negan, some people are just bad from the beginning. I know. Please get over Negan, Renee. smiley face. Seriously, though, I love me some Jeffrey Dean Morgan. I just can't stand Negan. Shrug. June had a good heart from the beginning to me, but because of what happened to her sweet, good-hearted man, she has become cold-hearted, and I can understand that. And to me, she can be redeemed, but Negan, nah, ain't no coming back from that. To me, but I respect you guys' opinion. I want to say, like, it's not a question of him coming back. I think it's a question of doing his time and whether or not he's paid his debt to society, I guess you could say. It's difficult to say, but given the fact that, you know, it's the apocalypse and he's alive, he could save a lot of people, and that would at least somewhat make up for the bad things that he did. It may not make up for all of them, but it might make up for some of them. Yep. And even some of the things he's already done, like he saved Judith, he saved the dog, you know, He killed Alpha, although it took him a long time to do it. Those things help. They don't put things at zero, but where they were, you know, where, like, he was at minus 9,000 on the scale, maybe he's at minus 80, 500 or 8,000 on the scale, you know, so he's got a long way to go, but he's anyway, that's my take. That's the other show. So we won't go into detail about that. LT, what do you got for what sauce?
Well, my what sauce goes back to, you know, our old friend, the mask crew, cruising around in the SWAT bus. And my only note is your mileage may vary. You know, we were talking about it before, whenever the Rangers had the MRAP, and we were talking about driving from the gas station to Lawton and back, and how much gas can you put in the MRAP, and how far can one go? Well, they don't have the support system anymore. We know that the tank farm is gone, so if they're still motoring around in the MRAP, where are they filling it up?
That's a good point.
And they got in the big chase with Morgan and Jenny in that Durango, and they don't seem to mind driving at full speed, burning gas. And then they show up, you know, they show up at the dam. So my question is, so where are they getting the gas for the MRAP?
I don't know. I had not thought of that, but are they raiding the coffers from the CRM, maybe?
Could be. Are they raiding whatever stocks Jenny had put up somewhere?
Yeah, who knows?
We don't know, but the question remains.
Yeah. Well, I had some what sauces here.
Okay. What a way, Brian.
My first thought after watching the gunfight was, why didn't anyone turn during the gunfight? But then on subsequent watches, I was like, well, maybe no one turned because it didn't last very long. Like if they stayed there, maybe we'd see some people turning, but like we did see quite a few of the Rangers get shot.
Mm-hmm.
So I would expect, you know, people to quick turn like they do sometimes.
They turn as fast as they need to.
One thing I noticed is that there were several people that came there on their horses, right? Mm-hmm. And they went into the dam, but they left the horses. Like they didn't bring the horses in. They left the horses. So what happened with the horses? Like, would they just let them, you know, oh, be free now? But it was something I noticed. It's like, what are you doing with those horses? You just got off your horse and just let them go. I think June was one of those people.
Well, maybe the horse valet came out and parked them.
I wondered, and Sherry was, I thought, very confusing in this episode. Like, she's saying, you know, that she's not going to find what, like, you know, she's still trying to, like, she's so mad at Jenny, yet she really has no history with Jenny. And I think she's so mad at her because she's a Negan proxy, right? And she's so mad at herself for not killing Negan that she, you know, is like taking it out on Jenny. But then again, and like, she's like the first one, you know, of the whole group. Basically, she becomes the leader of that group. But yet she has no grievance directly with Jenny. And what is the whole thing about her, like, finding her purpose with them and not with him? I don't understand all of that. So I wonder if they're ever going to get together, and like, where is she going to find purpose exactly?
Maybe even though she still loves him and she still, you know, has those residual feelings, maybe she sees Dwight, but she still sees Negan. Who knows?
I guess. And why are they still wearing the masks? I don't get that either. So,
well, you could always take the line from Princess Bride. You know, I think in the future, everyone will wear masks. They're very comfortable.
Well, I guess it makes it easy for COVID.
True.
You know, so.
Because it is sort of like, I think that the camouflaging effect of wearing a mask is sort of a moot point at this point.
Yeah. I will say this, and I didn't give this as an awesome sauce, but since we know that this episode was shot post COVID, this did not feel very COVID-y at all. Like, and for the, you know, Aaron and, you know, anyone who stopped watching The Walking Dead, you know, we just finished six episodes of season 10 that weren't originally part of season 10. They were, you know, added because of COVID and the fact that it was going to take longer for them to do season 11. And all six of these episodes had a very, as I called it many times, COVID-y kind of way to it. Like, you could tell that they were shot in a COVID environment. Mm-hmm. And this episode, to me, did not feel that way at all. Like, it felt like a regular episode. I wouldn't have noticed it.
Yeah, it didn't feel nearly as COVID-y as some of the other ones.
Yeah, so I didn't give it an awesome sauce for that, but I should have, now that I think about it. Because, like, now that I think about it, it's like, compare that to all the episodes that we just, you know, went through on the main show. This pretty much looked like a regular episode to me. I would have never known that it was shot during COVID. So,
yeah.
What happened with all those kids from last season? Where are they? I don't see them in the community here. So, what, do we just forget about them all?
They're, I can't say they're off at camp because they already lived in a camp. So, I don't know.
Yeah. This is almost a weak sauce. You know, it's like, I don't know. Sometimes it feels like she's a bad actress and other times it doesn't, but Danae Garcia, I think, was trying to make every shot that she got, every line, like, very dramatic, trying to turn lemons into lemonade. And it was kind of noticeable. She was like over dramatic, like, even, you know, even a couple of times where she's like, ah. I didn't think it was necessarily bad, but it seemed kind of overacted.
Yep. So, like, she's making the most of her screen time.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, that was a really good, you know, disgust noise you made. We have you in mind for your next part anyway. And then, of course, the thing that I'm noticing in this season is badass Daniel seems to be made very ineffective this season. And, you know, like, they take the, you know, the butt of the gun and they hit him with it. And, you know, this guy who, you know, was flaying, you know, privates in season one and, you know, burned down a vineyard in season two and all the great things he did in season three, they just make him look like an old man. And, you know, he was playing an old man, but this episode, he seemed like an old man. And yep. I didn't like that so much. So,
and I will agree.
All right. So let's move on to our sad / aw sauce.
Aww. Okay. We did get a bit from our listeners. Aaron from the internet says Jenny died. She could have caused some good issues for the team a bit longer. I'm not surprised June killed her, but it's a bummer. It was now, anytime you see an episode go more than the average time, beware. First John, now Jenny. Who's next? It better never be Alicia if you want to keep the show going.
Yeah. I don't know. I know some people didn't care for her character too much. I thought she was interesting, you know?
Yeah.
So, I am I don't know what to think of this next baddie, like, from what we understand, and maybe this is why we haven't seen them yet. You know, supposedly there's this submarine, and, you know, obviously the enemy is involved with this submarine, this like beached submarine.
Yep.
So what's their deal? We don't know yet. So I guess we'll have to see if they're more effective villains than Ginny, but I thought Ginny was interesting.
Yeah.
So
because she wasn't quite, it's, and I hate to bring him back up again, but it's kind of the same thing with Negan. She was a villain to our heroes, but she wasn't quite hugely villainous. I mean, yeah. she did have some good attributes given the situation, but yeah, I'm hoping that the submarine people and Lex Luthor's dad do a better job.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay.
What about you? You have a sad sauce?
I do have a sad sauce because once again, my sad sauce is Dwight and Sherry, the couple that just can't seem to be together, that they were separated and Dwight was holding out hope and they finally got back together and Sherry runs off with the MRAP people and he gives her the big speech of, look, we can be together again. And she's like, nope, I want to go find myself out there with them and not you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, poor old Dwight.
Yep. And I'm going to try to play this and talk over it because the last time we had this in our episode, we got a copyright claim so on YouTube. So I'm just thinking if we talk through it, maybe we won't. But
well, we can always hope.
We can always hope. But anyway, Sherry, I don't want to let go. I just hope someday you and Dwight get to hook back up because it's, I don't know, it's been a long time coming.
Yes, it has.
All right. So now I don't really have anything sad. I agree with you on that. So let's move on to our feedback.
We can talk about it.
We're done talking. Time to listen.
Well, last week we had five voicemails. This week we only have one, but it's from Renee from Atlanta. And I kind of like what she says here.
Hi, Brian. Hi, LT. I just wanted to tell you that I heard your testimony when I listened to the podcast, and I thought that was so beautiful. Not beautiful in the sense of what you're dealing with because of COVID. Well, I'm sorry. This is Renee from Atlanta. But because you shared it, and I'm sure you helped so many people by being so open and honest. And letting people know that, you know, I understand because this was a rough year for so many people. You know, people had to be at home by themselves, isolated. It was really rough. And just the fact that you share that, I mean, that was just awesome to me. And that she was okay with being open and honest. You know, that you poured your heart out. And and I just really felt something when you did that. And I just wanted to tell you, I'm going to pray for you. I'm going to continue to pray for you. You know, it's going to get better. You know, we all going to have bad days and good days, but it's going to get better. I don't personally know you, but of course I feel like I know you guys and you seem like you seem to be a very awesome person. Okay, on to the feedback from Fear. I give it an 8 out of 10. I'm so dang on glad. I want to say another word. So glad that Ginny is dead. Ha ha, the witch is dead. I'm so happy. But Dakota, she needs to die next. But I'm going to give my feedback on Facebook. I just wanted to call in and let you hear me say that. I didn't want to write it in there. I just want you to hear me say that. I'm just super proud that you shared that. And you was just transparent like that. And I really believe that you helped a lot of people. I really do. Okay, love you guys. Bye.
Well, thank you so much, Renee. And I'm pleased that, you thought as much as what you did. I mean, I had some debate whether or not I wanted to say some of that, but you know, now that I've said it, I feel like maybe I should say a little more. And so I am going to say a little bit more. What did COVID do to me? Well, it turned me into a drunk. I was drinking far too much. I had to give up alcohol completely. And, you know, that wasn't my only problem. As part of it, not so much because of the alcohol, but just some other things that I did. The big problem happened, and I don't want to go into a lot of detail about this, but I lost my best friend and someone who I really care about. I still care about very much. And, you know, I still miss, and I'm going to miss for a long time to come. And, you know, it's like one of my deepest regrets that I'll ever have. And it happened, you know, not so much because of COVID, but just because of the things that COVID brought on. And, you know, it's just, it's been kind of an eye opener to me. Thankfully, you know, like I said, I've, you know, been through therapy and still going through, you know, seeing a psychiatrist and you know, taking medication. Actually, that got changed yesterday. So they're still working on certain mixes of the medication I'm on. But it's been hard, and it's, you know, caused all sorts of trouble at home. There's been some issues with my marriage too, and I don't know. So maybe I've said too much. Maybe I'll pull a lot of this out. I don't know, but yeah. So it's been tough,
and I can say that I appreciate the fact that Brian is willing to open up. I got nothing to compare to that, but I think we've all struggled through this.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said last week, it's the worst, been the worst year of my life. And, you know, thankfully I will say things have been getting a lot better. I feel a lot better. I've stopped drinking like 6 weeks ago, and, I don't miss it. And, I don't think I'll ever drink again after this. It's just too much. So,
yeah,
I got it. I would say COVID made me too good at drinking. If you could say that.
Yeah.
Renee had some more to say, and I'm going to let you read it, LT.
Okay. Renee says, overall great episode, but that Strand, the great pretender, I'm really trying to figure out his angle because he's next on my no redemption list because I don't trust him. I don't trust him. Period. What's up with Sherry and Dwight? Girl, do you want your man or not? Because you have too many excuses. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Jenny didn't personally do anything to Sherry, right? She's just placing all her anger about Negan onto Jenny, which is no reason to keep walking away from your man. You see what happened to June's man. You better get it together, ma'am, before Dwight's a goner, because it's back to anybody who get it on TWD franchise. And I, for one, love it. I hate it when my peeps die, but that's what drew me to the show. Love you guys. Have an awesome week. And looks like praying hands, praying hands, praying hands, praying hands.
Well, thank you so much, Renee. And like I said, thank you for the kind voicemail. And you'll probably have more to say about what I just said.
Yep.
Anyway, this is actually something that I've learned from therapy. Is that that's the one thing that I've been doing with therapy. Is a lot of people, they try to, when they do therapy, they, you know, try to make themselves look good. I don't hold anything back with my therapist. You know, I just, I, if you want to get better, you need to lay all the cards out on the table, the good and the bad and the ugly, and just tell them what's really going on, because that's the whole thing. And that's why I'm trying to be open here, for like you said, Renee, I'm hoping that my openness will help other people. So
yep.
Just, you know, it's okay to not be okay. That's the main thing. And you have to go through your things to become stronger. And I'm trying to deal with them and become a better person as a result. So anyway, that's all I've got to say about that for this week. Glynis from Toronto is next. She says, I meant to mention in the last The Door episode, was that John's candy wrapper ring on June's hand shown both when John had turned and she stroked his head last episode in Fear of the Walking Dead season 6, episode 8, and again when June was digging the grave and discovered and grabbed his gun in this episode, of course, Fear of the Walking Dead season 6, episode 9. I hadn't noticed. Did you notice?
I think it was. In fact, I'm kind of pretty sure it was.
Yeah. I will have to go back and look at that, but I think you are right. I just I hadn't noticed it, but that makes sense that it would be. Another item from Fear of the Walking Dead season 6, episode 8, The Door, that had just occurred to me was when Dakota killed John. Was that splinters mixed with blood bursting out from the gunshot entry as she shot him in the chest where he had pocketed those Scrabble pieces that spelled goodbye, June? Wow.
I don't know. I just took it as the squib. Yeah, it could very well have been, but I just took it as the squib load they had to do the blood splatter.
Hmm. It would have been a very quick episode if June had popped Virginia right at the beginning. I guess that Ranger is still holding on to one of John's guns then?
Probably so.
Well, like, I'm trying, like, I know, obviously, what's her name? Dakota had one of the guns.
Yep.
And so did June have that? Is that the gun that June had, or did June have?
Yes.
Okay. So where's
the gun that June had? The gun that June had is the one that Dakota shot him with.
Right. Okay.
The other gun is the one that, and I don't know his name, but it's like Ranger bodyguard guy that was always with Virginia. He has the other one.
I believe his name is Hill. It's either Hill, Raleigh, or Lee. I'm not sure, but I want to say his name is Hill.
It's possible. I thought Hill was one of the guys that got killed at the molasses plant, but I could be wrong.
Well, when I just looked at Wikipedia, it mentioned a Hill. So now I'm checking the Walking Dead wiki and see if it specifically has a picture of him. I'd have to see. Doesn't look like him, but I don't know. It might be him.
Well, it's that guy.
That guy, yeah.
Because we know who he is, but it's that guy.
Yeah. Oh, no, it is. It was Hill. Yeah. Okay. Hill was the guy that put the gun on. Yeah. Because if you look up Hill here, I'll share a link with you.
Okay.
If you go there, you'll see the picture, and that's, I believe that's the guy.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Hill. So anyway, getting back to this, it doesn't bode well ever when you're forced to get down on your knees in a lineup. Strand, Fear the Walking Dead, taking his cue from Simon, the Walking Dead, in prepping the lineup for Virginia. Morgan's people lined up versus Rick's people lined up. Yeah, well, that's pretty much what it was.
Yep.
Nice switcheroo from Strand to secretly build a small army of Rangers against Virginia. Something that has struck me always in Fear the Walking Dead it does sound so quaint and old fashioned whenever they mention a ranger. It's not ever shortened. It's always Ranger Cameron, Ranger Dory, Ranger Strand, Ranger, et cetera, et cetera. I suppose sounding like ranks in the army that this group has had some sort of order. And, you know, it's funny. I think her name was Samuels. The one thing I'm curious about, we had that one ranger that looked like Ginny that we were thinking was going to be this character that was like, you know, as a doppelganger or something, you know, go in as her double to fool somebody and, you know, get shot. Well, that doesn't end up happening. So I wonder if they're going to bring her back at all.
She's just Jenny's stunt double.
I mean, maybe she'll end up being a part of the, you know, get killed in the whole, you know, submarine battle or whatever it is. But right now, anyway, I was thinking that she would have taken something, you know, in her death, but she didn't end up showing up in this episode at all.
Nope.
I enjoy the Western vibe in Fear of the Walking Dead, again with the big shootout. And of course, Morgan would have managed to extract the wounded Virginia from all the chaos that ensued in order to have bargaining powers to get Grace and Daniel back. Well, of course he would. Yeah, I really liked the gunfight, actually. It was, I thought it was a good part of the episode.
Yep.
Morgan de-arming Sherry before she could kill Virginia reminded me of the scene between Morgan and Nick when Nick was trying to go for the knife, same sweeping of the legs with the bow. Oh, yeah. 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 I remember that. Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, that was also the episode that Nick got killed.
Yep.
Yeah. I think that was rather brave of Virginia to offer to be killed by Morgan and the lesser of the two evils of being handed over to Strand. A little good character glimpsed by Morgan for Virginia prepared to martyr herself so her daughter Dakota could be reformed at the settlement. Sherry is just exchanging one bad group for another with choosing that violent masked group, which is no better than the Saviors, instead of having a chance of a better life with Dwight. Didn't get Sherry's reasoning there to rather leave and not stay with Dwight, who she supposedly loves. Exactly my point. I don't get it either. Mm-hmm. What is Strand going to show Alicia? Maybe what the end is the beginning graffiti group is all about with the submarine and the possibility of nukes. Yeah, I've heard this, that maybe the key that Morgan has is like a key for nukes. You know, the key to like turning on missiles or something.
Yeah, but you have to have two keys.
Well, maybe there's another key. Who knows?
Could be.
Yeah. Now, June killing Virginia, sort of same situation as John being killed by Dakota. Both John and Virginia had a change of heart. John had decided he wanted to live, and Virginia was going far away to care for Dakota in a way she hadn't up to now. But both weren't given the chance to prove that they had changed. June was all for helping people previously and tried to convince John to stay and that they could work together for Virginia. John as a ranger and June in her hospital that Virginia promised her. John had tried to tell her it was just a lie and a false dream, but it's sad that it took John's death for June to see Virginia for what she really was. June is not going to recover from this anytime soon, if ever. Now, taking a life in cold blood, she's no better now than Virginia and Dakota. Interesting.
Hmm.
It would have been better to kill Dakota, as now Morgan's community still has Dakota to deal with, and she'll be unhinged further with the death of her mother, Virginia. No telling what Dakota will get up to now and how she'll handle the death of her mother when she just found out she had a mother. She'll be even more unstable, especially with seeing Virginia lying there dead. Yeah, like, I don't know how she's going to take that. Like, she seemed very skeptical of Virginia being her mother.
Yeah,
so
she did.
I don't know if you know. So, I mean, I would say Dakota's a wild card just in general. So we'll see.
Yes, she is.
It was super symbolic, though, with June walking away after killing Virginia, wearing John Dory's cowboy hat and holding John Dory's gun, and not a backward glance to the people she'd known for years, going past Morgan's axe slash spear slash bow in the ground. What a picture that was, with the axe covered in blood and going against Morgan's words that there'd be no blood split until a very good reason arose that he'd draw his weapon out of the ground. So despite that weapon not being drawn out of the ground, more blood was spilt. It'll be interesting where June decides to lay her hat. Yeah, I said that earlier. Will she join Strand, Sherry's group, or just go off by herself somewhere? Or maybe join the group that Strand seems to be aware of? June's been known to join opposing groups when she was a part of the Vultures. Yeah, that's right. She was a part of the Vultures, wasn't she?
Yes, she was.
And John got shot there at the racetrack by Alicia. That's right. I forgot about that, too. Caught in the crossfire for his troubles of spotting June and going to her when Alicia was aiming for June, just as Alicia blamed June for her mom's slash Madison's death. There was no body, so Madison could still be alive, and I'm still sticking to that theory. You and Aaron both, and you know, I bring it up from time to time because I could see it too, but I mean, yeah, there has been no body. I think they intentionally did that, by the way. I think they wanted the ability to bring her back like they did Daniel, you know.
Yeah, but you're gonna have to make me say it again. She's in the home team dugout. Eating turnips and old hot dogs, waiting for her time to come back.
Yeah. All right, that's it. Thank you so much for great feedback, as always, Glynis. You had some really good points.
All right. And we've got some more feedback from Deanna from Detroit. She says, I'm not happy with Morgan's flip-flopping about killing Jenny. Come on. She threatened to kill Grace and your child, pointed a gun at her. Morgan, this was not the time for your indecisiveness. Dakota is Jenny's offspring, like mother, like daughter. So is Al just going to let Sherry's people drive off with her SWAT truck? Will she come back once she finds out Jenny is dead? What's going to be Dakota's fate now that her psycho mom is gone? Overall, decent episode. It was all over the place, in my opinion, but I am happy Virginia is gone.
It was kind of all over the place in some ways. But I mean, I enjoyed it. I think, I know that some didn't enjoy it. Like I know, like one of the podcasts I listened to, they were kind of railing on it, quite a bit. I thought it had a lot more good than it had bad, and, a lot of tense moments there, but you know, there were some glitchy things, but I really only took minor marks off for it. So,
yep,
you know, like,
well, and it's like my point. I thought it was a good episode. I mean, I like what they did as far as plot drivers. As you said earlier, I think you can tell that last week was supposed to be a cliffhanger and this one was supposed to be the start of the season. I say that because typically you don't kill two major characters back to back. I could be wrong, but in my memory, John dying would have been the cliffhanger. And then to kill Jenny out of the box with the first episode would have been the hook for coming back.
Okay.
So as we've said, because of the juggling and shuffling due to COVID-ish, that's kind of how I see that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong. I don't think they've had two main characters get whacked back-to-back like that.
No, I don't think so. I mean, technically, Ginny wasn't a main character. I mean, she basically was, but she still had like guest starring.
But let's
I know.
Let's not worry about
technicalities.
Let's not worry about credits.
Right.
I mean,
she was effectively a star while she's been on show. So, you know, whether or not she had the credit for it or not, she was a big part of the last, 12 episodes of the show, I'd say.
But I think that's pretty much it for me there. I think that's about.
Yeah, that's pretty much it for me as well. So,
okay.
Okay, so now it's time for news, ratings, and info.
What the hell is happening?
I have no idea.
Okay, so ratings this week. Unfortunately, ratings are down. Yeah, I know. Usually I'd play Price is Right, but that little sad trombone is on my new device, so... I thought I would go with that. Season 6, episode 9 got a 0.22 in the 18 to 49 with 1.119 million viewers. Now, that 0.22 is the lowest rating for Fear the Walking Dead to date, unfortunately. The 1.119 is the second lowest total viewers to date. Season 6, episode, I want to say 7, was the lowest to date. So this is versus last week's 0.26 in the 18 to 49 with 1.171 million viewers. So a little up. Now, since I've been doing this again, the 25 to 54, the numbers are higher at 0.35. And us old timers at 50 and over got a 0.70. So like I say, it is the sliding demographic. And in those numbers, it was actually in the 50 and over, it was actually higher than it was last week. So last week it was a 0.42, 25 to 54, and 0.68, 50 and over. Talking Dead, you want to know how Talking Dead did? Well, it didn't do anything.
It wasn't there.
It wasn't there. So it will not be appearing until the season finale, season 6, episode 16. So unfortunately, we will not have any Talking Dead information until then. And of course, last week, it got a very dismal 0.03 with 132,000 viewers. Now, I did a little check, looked at Gangs of London. It was down also with a 0.04 in the 18 to 49 with 338,000 viewers. And that's versus last week's 0.06 and 342,000 viewers. And I even checked Ride with Norman Reedus, and I don't know what episode that's at, so I didn't even try to figure it out. That's at 0.03 with only 118,000 viewers, so not very much. I don't really have much to say about like info, except I know that there were some interviews that were going on about Colby Minifee. And it, as she talked about her death, and basically, like I said earlier, I think she knew that the character was going to die this season. That was not a surprise. So she loved the episode and loved the scenes that she got. In fact, she even threw a few F-bombs in the interview. So
yes, she did.
Yeah. I'll see if I can dig up a link to that and I'll post it on the Facebook group. So, as far as the parrots, unfortunately, I will also say that, The Walking Dead did not even appear this week. So we get a double. And LT, you'll see back on top is SpongeBob.
SpongeBob. It beggars the imagination.
Yeah. 64.4 times the demand of an average show. The previous number one, Attack on Titan, was number two at 62.3 times the average demand. And Saturday Night Live staying at number three. Game of Thrones, almost 2 years out from its last episode, is still staying strong at number four. And I think that's because they're doing a 10th anniversary special right now, or, you know, trying to celebrate it on HBO, playing a lot of Game of Thrones right now. So I think that's why it's
climbing.
Right. It's climbing. But yeah, so that's it for this episode. So why don't you tell people how to contact us and send feedback?
All right. We want to encourage you to follow us on Twitter. That's at WalkingDeadTTM. Also on Instagram at the same handle. To submit your theories and feedback, most people post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group. That's facebook.com/groups/WalkingDeadTTM. You can email us at walkingdead@talkthroughmedia.com. You can also use our feedback forum, which is on our webpage at talkthroughmedia.com/feedback. If you want to leave voicemail, you can call 216-232-6146. All of our new episodes are on YouTube. Just search for Talk Through Media and remember to subscribe and click that bell to get notified when we have new videos. The videos go out first before the podcast does. So if you want to be the first, check us out on YouTube.
Yeah, in the case of this past week, the video went out at least a good 4 to 6 hours before the podcast did. So
we'd love it if you'd like and review the Talk Through Media Facebook page at facebook.com/talkthroughmedia. The best way you can support us is through our Patreon. That's www.patreon.com/walkingdeadtalkthrough. We'd like to thank our Patreon supporters, Clint McCollum, Renee Murray, and Lawrence Todd. You can subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts or the podcast client of your choice. While you're there, give us a rating and review. And I might say that we haven't had a review in a while, so we'd love it if you would give us a review.
Yeah, it's been quite a while.
So give us a review. You can also leave us a review at podchaser.com. There you can rate individual episodes or the whole podcast. Remember to share our posts on Facebook and Twitter when we post them, or tell a friend. Word of mouth is the best way to get us new listeners. And we'd also like it if you'd share the network post about the podcasts. You can go to our webpage and share that link out as well.
Yep. And, anything you can do to help us get more listeners, we appreciate. As far as other stuff on the network, we are still planning to do a Patreon for the Star Trek podcast, and that's still to come. We'll try to do one. I don't know. I have to, again, things are not looking good for this weekend. So we might do one for the end of the month. We'll see. If not, it'll be the very beginning of next month. That Patreon is at patreon.com/Brian and Ruthie. And our next episode, as far as this, we'll be covering season 6, episode 10 of Fear the Walking Dead. The title of it is Handle with Care, and it's a good thing that I checked Wikipedia just now, because the information on who wrote it and who directed it changed from the last time I looked. It is written by Ashley Cardiff and David Johnson, not to be confused with David Leslie Johnson McGoldrick, who I always call the mouthful. Who actually wrote the recent Here's Negan, directed by Heather Capiello. I don't recall that name before, so I'll have to look her up on IMDb. The description from, I think I got this from Google as well. A threat worse than Virginia is on the horizon. Morgan calls for unity and invites all survivors to his settlement, tasking Daniel to keep the peace. However, Daniel will need to face his own challenge in hopes of protecting his friends. So, until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm LT.
And this is Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.